I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
All right. Settle down. Settle down. Take your seats. Come on. Let's go. Take your seats. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, class. My name is Tony Spears, and you're listening to Binary Gamer, where our goal is to learn, play, and appreciate video games in all ways, shape, or form, past, present, and future. So, this week is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to be talking about something kind of near and dear to my heart, but I am going to give you a quick update on Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So, we're just going to hop right into it. Homeofnerds.com makes this entire thing possible. Binary Gamer would not be in front of your face right now if it was not for homeofnerds.com, your one-stop shop for everything news, reviews, tips, and tricks. Everything is video games on the internet you can find over on homeofnerds.com. Make sure you check us out over on YouTube, youtube.com/homeofnerds, where you can check out the Nerd Alert, you can check out the Daily Nerds, you can check out Let's Plays, you can also listen to Binary Gamer over there. And of course, you can find Home of Nerds on Twitter, at Home of Nerds, and you can find me, Tony Spears, on Twitter, at iFlipOfTheSwitch. And of course, send in your emails, comments, concerns, complaints to podcast@homeowners.com. If you have a topic you want us to do a lesson on in the show, we will do it there. You can also send us topics via reviews on iTunes. We greatly appreciate those. Get a little feedback from you guys. And that is the rigmarole. So now, let's get to the topic at hand. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Holy cow. So last week, myself and Dan Phoenix from Home of Nerds were talking about the game, and wow, this game is nothing short of amazing. The fact that it has gotten perfect scores from every outlet that has reviewed it should speak volumes about the game, but just going and playing it, getting my hands on it, and really diving in there, oh man, it is... Oh man, I'm telling you, it's really hard for me to describe how much this game really means to me as a fan of this series, as someone that started out with Legend of Zelda at a very young age and just fell in love with the story and the characters, the lore, the setting, everything about it is beautiful. It's perfect. It's probably one of the greatest creations in fantasy when you really break it down. I'm not talking about the game itself. I'm talking about the entire Legend of Zelda universe, world, however you want to refer to it. The characters and the settings and the way things are in those games have been touched on by so many different, not only inspirations, but have had so many things inspired by them that it's really hard to not look at Legend of Zelda and see probably one of the best stories ever told when you really break it down. I mean, does it have its weird, plot holes and, threads that just kind of lead nowhere and like offshoots of stuff that just really didn't make any sense? Sure. I mean, we can all point to Link's crossbow training on the Wii and say, hey, some things just aren't that great. But on the whole, in the majority, The Legend of Zelda is something that probably the world would be a poorer place without it. And I'm really glad that this game is doing justice to that legacy, is doing justice to that mental image I've always had in my head. As a little kid that started out playing these games, it's amazing to me to look at this now and be like, this is what it was in my head always. Like, it's funny when you look back at games like Link to the Past or, even Ocarina of Time. Ocarina of Time was so small in its scope, really. I mean, it was huge and grand at the time. It was your very first 3D Legend of Zelda game. It's just... like, go out there, explore Hyrule, explore the world, go and save the princess and do. But, man, it really is, when you think about it, just so small in scope. Same thing with Majora's Mask and, a lot of games before that in the series. But when you look at it now and you see just how, like, the thing is, I don't think this game should have been called Breath of the Wild. It should have been called Breath of the Wild. Like, the breadth and scope of how just immense this world is. And it is so good. I'm not terribly far into the game right now, and I'm probably going to be talking a lot more about it in fits and spurts on, you know, in various podcasts later to come. But for now, just know that I am knee deep in my trip back to Hyrule, and I am enjoying every single moment of it. I have acquired some really cool gear. I have made my way through a good portion of like the towers, not nearly all of them, but I'm getting some progress going there. I have a horse whose name is Sunlight that my daughter named, and she is terribly attached to this horse, so I could never get rid of it. That's fine. It's just, it doesn't have a lot of stamina, so I'm just going to try and get one that's painted, you know, close to it, and hope she doesn't notice. But for the most part, me and that horse are homies. But man, this game, just so, so good. But speaking of games that have a long history with me, I want to speak about history in general when it comes to video games. So we're going to tell a little story, and then we're going to talk about something really important. So let's start with the story. I have been playing video games for as long as I can remember. My earliest memory of playing video games was playing Super Mario on the NES, and I remember I beat the game when I was 5. And everybody in my house was really surprised that I had beat the game. Like, they were flat out flabbergasted at the fact that I had beat the game, because I was a 5-year-old, and they set me down in front of the console, and I was like, I got this, I think. And I did. Who knew? And then I went on to play other games and eventually other systems and things like that. And I didn't have the appreciation for games as the medium that they were at the time. Not the appreciation that I should have had. I saw video games as a mode of entertainment, and that's about it. But on the whole, I didn't look at it as this is something important. And not a lot of people did at the time. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people were really more focused on the entertainment value as opposed to like what these were as touchstones in creativity and in art in some cases, and in pushing technology and developing different ways of expanding its own medium. You know what I mean? Like, video games is definitely one of those things that has forced like improvement in the hardware and the software strictly based on its own limitations. Like, it, you know, it fits within this bubble and then eventually wants to grow beyond that bubble. And so the hardware and the mode of software has to change with it in order to, you know, meet this vision that people have. And so it continues to grow. It's like an amoeba, you know, like a single celled organism. And eventually, you know, it splits and it multiplies and it grows and it grows and it grows. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's not, you know, video games are not alone in this. I'm not trying to paint video games as this, you know, pillar among the creative arts where, you know, it stands alone and no other creative medium, you know, goes in this direction whatsoever. That's not the case. But video games are very unique in the fact that they've had so much input from so many people. And that's a really important factor here. So as I was growing up and I was playing video games, I didn't think about the fact that, you know, when I got a Super Nintendo, my grandfather sold my NES to somebody. When I got a Sega, and then I eventually moved on to another system after the Sega, I think I went from my Super Nintendo to the 64. I sold my Sega to get my hands on a 64. Well, I mean, sold my Sega and then mowed a lot of lawns. But regardless, I wasn't putting this stuff back. Now, in retrospect, of course, I would have gone back to my child self and been like, no, put this stuff in a box and spend your money that you're going to spend on those Twizzlers and other crap that you don't need on a storage unit and just build it up and work your way through. But unfortunately, I was not that forethinking as a child. And I mean, not for nothing. I was trying, but I definitely was not in the mode of preservation at the time. Was not on my radar. So as I get older and I play video games now, I'm starting to realize what I was really doing when I was partying with this stuff. Now, granted, you know, it goes on to other people, and maybe those people still have the systems, and I really hope they do. I really hope there's some kid somewhere that is playing his, you know, his dad's Sega that was originally my Sega, and then, you know, the list goes on and the line continues to grow as to where the stuff goes, but eventually the parts wear out and people throw the stuff away, and then the games go with it, and the boxes that the games came in, instruction booklets, guides, various things. And it's sad because a lot of this stuff, it gets thrown out without a second thought, because video games aren't seen in this way of like, oh, this is something we need to save because this is something that's important. A lot of people don't think that. So when I started Binary Gamer, I started it with the intent of just teaching people why video games are important and teaching people that you can appreciate games in the same way that you appreciate movies or television or art or books or, you know, I mean, anything that anybody puts any amount of time and effort into, you can appreciate that thing because somebody took the time to make it. And somebody most likely took the time to make it for you. Sometimes art can be very, very masturbatory in the essence that, you know, people make it for themselves. But most of the time, good art, real good art, is made for other people to enjoy and to witness and to, you know, be a part of in some cases. And video games fall into that realm of a form of art where the vision of the creator is meant to be expressed to someone other than themselves. Of course, they may sit down and enjoy playing their game just like anybody else. I'm pretty sure Tim Schafer sits down and plays his own games all the time. Probably not. He's probably played Costume Quest at least 1,000 times, but who knows? That's not the point. The point being is that along with the creator's enjoyment, the enjoyment is more of a third-party experience. And that's an awesome thing. I mean, there's not a lot of things outside of, like, you know, mainstream entertainment where you can say that. Where you can say that the thing that I'm holding in my hand was made by another person and not just made for me, but made for everybody with the hope that everybody would like it. Now, some people won't, and that's fine. Some, you know, it's definitely different strokes for different folks. Like, I'm a big fan of the Monster Rancher series of games for the PlayStation. Not a lot of people like those games. In fact, some people flat out hate them. I personally enjoy them. So it makes me sad when those games don't come back around, but I'm also really happy that they exist. And someone put their hard-earned blood, sweat, and tears into that project and made an awesome series of games, which I and probably a very small number of people really enjoy. And so that thing will always live on in perpetuity somewhere. And that's awesome. But now there is a reigning body of people who are making it their job to preserve video game history. And that is awesome. So if you're not aware, the Video Game History Foundation just recently rolled out their Patreon because they are an official 501c nonprofit organization, and their entire mission in life is to archive and essentially store video games for years to come. Now, what these guys are doing is really important because not only do we need to save the software side of things and to some lesser or greater degree, the hardware side of things, because a lot of software can be played on emulation. Through emulation, and that's all fine and good. If you just want to get your hands on the game and play the game, that's fantastic. But in order to truly preserve the games as they were made, as they were, we'll say created, you have to go into the more tangible side of things. You can't just have the software, you can't just have the code, you can't just have the ones and zeros that make up the game, because while that's the soul of the game, no one wants just the idea of Michelangelo's David. They want to see it. They want to see the work that was put into it. And so the Video Game History Foundation is going around and essentially, you know, whether they're going through and finding stuff in little treasure troves all over the United States, or people are donating things to them to be put out, it's a matter of finding everything that is tied to video games, and not just video games as a concept, but particular video games like the magazine ads to Mega Man 2, the freaking instruction booklet to Crash Bandicoot, stuff like that, stuff that is tied to games in a more ephemeral sense. And it's important to find those, to start finding this stuff and archiving it and, you know, keeping it now and preserving it, because if they don't, this stuff is going to go to the wayside. And this really dawned on me when I started hearing about these guys and reading up on it, because I remember just a few months ago, sitting in my house, we're getting ready to move. Well, it was more than a few months ago, but we were getting ready to move, and I was trying to downsize stuff, and I found a box of Game Informer magazines that I just kept around. And I used to have a physical subscription to Game Informer, which I actually, oddly enough, looked forward to every month. And I was like, well, I don't need this stuff anymore. I'm not going to read these again. And I threw them all out. And it blows my mind now to think about it, because I could have kept those and I could have sent them to these guys. Now, they probably got 1,000 of these things in, but I could have done my part. You know what I mean? Maybe I had an issue that nobody else had and wouldn't have sent in. There's no way of knowing. But it's a lot of stuff like that that is really important to think about when it comes to preserving these things. Now, like I said, we could just go and create a huge online database and put everything from frickin' Alex Kidd all the way down to frickin' Xenogears into the digital archive, but that's only going to preserve a small fragment of that game. It will preserve the games as they are in their playable state. But everything that went into it, everything that went into the marketing, the developing, the creative side of it, you know, different, you know, articles that go along with it, not just written articles, but like action figures and like toys and displays and, you know, t-shirts, posters, books, all kinds of stuff. It all does need to be kept and saved, because if we don't, it'll all go away, and then all we'll be left with is just the ones and zeros. And we don't want to have that. We don't want to just be left with the ones and zeros, because that's really, it's hollow, and to an extent, it's almost soulless. It doesn't have the same feel. And I'm not trying to get all like downsy and be like, no, you need to go out there and you need to get up all your stuff and send it to these guys so they can put it in storage somewhere until they get a building and all this stuff. Like, no, I'm not saying that. You can do it in your own way. I have made it a point to find and collect things that I find of particular coolness when it comes to video games. Now, granted, some of it's not cool. Like, I have a Dreamcast sitting on my shelf right now, and not really a whole lot that I'm doing with it right now. It's sitting here, it's not hooked up, it's not plugged in, anything like that, but I have it, and I'm going to hold on to it for as long as I can. And I have other things, too, that I've started to go back through, like old boxes and stuff like that, and I'm finding a lot of really cool things that I set aside as a kid, because I am inherently a pack rat. So that kind of worked out for me, because I have some pretty cool stuff. I have found some old action figures, a lot of Ninja Turtles, but, you know, stuff. I kept a lot of Nintendo Power magazines as a kid, come to find out, and those are all really cool. So I'm going to hold on to those, and I'm probably going to end up sending it to these guys at some point. But what you do need to know is this. The Video Game History Foundation right now is made up of a handful of people. Primarily among them is Frank Cifaldi, who is the founder and director, Steve Lin, one of the founding board members, Simon Carlos, another founding board member, Mike Micah, who has my favorite name in the entire universe, founding board member, and then Chris Melsalinos, another founding board member. So these guys right now are going through and they're doing the work. They're taking donations, which I will talk about in a bit. They're taking donations, and their entire mission statement says right here. You can read it for yourself over at gamehistory.org. It says, the Video Game History Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to cataloging, digitizing, and preserving the history of video games. And that is really important, because if you were to apply this to anything else, if they're going to catalog, digitize, and preserve film, TV, books, comic books, action figures. The point being is, like, this stuff isn't going to cure cancer. We know this. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to change the deficit. It's not going to stop, you know, war in the Middle East. But what it's going to do is going to preserve a part of who we are as society. And it's a small part. Video games are a small part of society. Just like movies and literature and art are small parts of society and our culture. But it's important to preserve those things, because heaven forbid that like a nuclear holocaust happens and everything goes like full Fallout 4 style, and there's nothing left, and then people are looking for some remnant, some explanation as to who mankind was. You want to have these little nuggets, these little databases of who we were as a culture and as people. And I mean, hopefully these guys can do it, but they can do it. It's not a matter of hope, it's a matter of will, because with our help, they can do this. So what we're looking at now is a group of people that are working strictly off donations, 501c nonprofit. They are just strictly taking the money that they are given by Joe Schmo, the public, and they're putting that toward this entire project, putting it toward the preservation of video games. So what I'm going to do in this particular episode is I'm going to put a link in the description to their website and to their Patreon. Their Patreon is patreon.com/gamehistory.org, and you can go and donate as much as you want. These guys already have $20 for me coming every month, and I'm going to do my part in trying to find stuff to send to these guys, because I feel like this is very important. This is a big passion of mine, and I hope one day to be able to provide something of substance to these guys, something that they haven't seen yet, or something that they would just think is cool and want to put into the database at some point. I mean, to be perfectly honest, Frank Cifaldi kind of has my dream job, and that's perfectly fine. I would only hope one day to work in an organization like this, or even this organization, work with them alongside them in some capacity. That would be amazing. But for now, I'm going to do my part. I'm going to give them a little bit of scratch, and I'm going to send them everything that I can, because I mean, if we don't as a community, as a group of gamers, as, you know, people that love this medium, come together to take these steps, like eventually the history will go away. It's good and it's fun to think about the future of games, to think about what games are coming out, but you also have to be able to take a look back and appreciate and take the steps to preserve what came before, because without what came before, we don't have what we have now, and we won't have what we will have later on. I mean, without I know it sounds dumb, but in its own weird twisted way, without the Amiga, the Nintendo 64, the PlayStation, the original Xbox, we don't get things like Horizon Zero Dawn. We don't get Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild without the things that came before it. And that's the important thing to take from here, is that in order to truly appreciate the games that we will have in the future, we should, as a community, take steps to appreciate and preserve the games that came before. And that's it. That is my whole lesson for this week, is take some time and, I mean, do a little bit of research. I mean, you go to their website, go to their Patreon, find out what they're really about. But also take a little bit of time to learn a little more about, like, maybe one of your favorite old games when you were a kid. Take a little bit of time. Go to Wikipedia. Go find a fan forum somewhere and really learn about it and try to understand what went into making that game, so you can understand why you loved it, why it meant something to you. So that's the lesson for this week, kids. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Binary Gamer is brought to you by homeofnerds.com. Homeofnerds.com is your one-stop shop for everything news, reviews, tips, and tricks. Everything that is video games is over there at homeofnerds.com. You can also check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/homeofnerds. You can check out Binary Gamer on iTunes. You can also check out Home of Nerds on Twitter, twitter.com/homeofnerds. And you can find myself, Tony Spears, over at Twitter, at iFlippaTheSwitch. All one word, exactly as it sounds, iFlippaTheSwitch. So that's going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Tony Spears. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.